Second Peter chapter 1, beginning with verse 3. His divine power has granted to us all things that pertain to life and godliness through the knowledge of him who calls us to his own glory and excellence, by which he has granted to us his precious and very great promises, so that through them you may become partakers of the divine nature, having escaped from the corruption that is in the world because of sinful desire. For this very reason, make every effort, which is what we are now looking at, make every effort to supplement your faith with virtue, and virtue with knowledge, and knowledge with self-control. And then what we are looking at today, it is, and self-control with steadfastness, and steadfastness with godliness, and godliness with brotherly affection, and lastly, and brotherly affection with love. We'll end our reading there. If you've been coming to KBC for a while now, you will know that the words that we have just read are under the theme that we have been studying, entitled Christian Grow Up. And it's singular there, so that none of us finds himself or herself hiding in the crowd. Christian Grow Up. In other words, if you are a Christian today, this message is for you, saying you should make an effort, a concerted effort, an ongoing effort to grow up. We were looking at verse 5 into verse 6, in which we are seeing various characteristics being added to previous ones. And it is something that we are being urged to do as believers. And the last one we looked at was that of adding self-control to our knowledge. Self-control to our knowledge. And we find that at the very beginning of verse 6, if you see there, statement, and knowledge with self-control. There's hope. We try it. All right. Sounds like the engineers are continuing to work here. Hopefully, by the time I finish my sermon, you'll be able to hear me. Thank you very much, Emmanuel and team. Okay, so we were able to see what self-control was. And essentially, I would have summarized it by you being able to say to yourself, stop it. As simple as it goes, your ability in the moment of temptation to say to yourself, no, this way I must not go. And consequently, you do not go there. You are able to control self. We also went on to see how it looks like in the Christian faith, because there we are dealing with issues to do with spirituality, with godliness, with morality. So it's a lot more than simply wanting to stop yourself, for instance, from going to watch a game of football or from eating some ice cream. This is primarily in the context of sin and salvation, of wickedness and godliness. And finally, we spent some time looking at how to attain this. And simply through the means of grace as we grow in the things of God. Well, let's go on to see what we are looking at today. Peter says that, and self-control with steadfastness. Self-control with steadfastness. Now, this year, as I already announced before, I clocked 40 years as a Christian. And I can attest to the importance of steadfastness. Because some 40 years ago, there were many of us, as young people, who came to Christ. That if all of us had maintained steadfastness, Zambia would be different. The Christian churches would be different. But when my mind looks back to 30 to 40 years ago, and I am able to recall face after face of fellow young people with whom we were singing, "Fill my cup, Lord, I lift it up, Lord." Most of those faces are a representation of what we call scarecrows. In other words, they are sad stories, because somewhere along the way, they failed to continue in faith, in virtue, in knowledge, and in self-control. They are not dead, well, some have died in the process, but a few are still around. We still meet. Some of them even still go to church. But they are but pew warmers now. A sad reflection of a life that failed in consistency along the way. And that's what made me emotional as I was preparing today's message. It is just that realization, as I hope to repeat by the end of this sermon. This auditorium is filled with many young people. What is going to be prophetic to whether 10, 20, 30 years from now, you will be having a clout for Christ or not, is whether this aspect of steadfastness will be true of you. So let us look at it together. And we will go through our normal channel. First of all, to look at the meaning of this word. Secondly, to look at how this word applies to the Christian life. And thirdly and lastly, how we can nurture what is being talked about here in our lives. So let's begin with the first. What steadfastness means. To begin with, it's important for us to realize that it's a word that not only Peter uses, but Paul uses as well. If we just peep at 1 Timothy chapter 6, 1 Timothy and chapter 6, this is what we find in verse 11. This is Paul writing to Timothy.
a young pastor, and this is what he's saying to him. 1 Timothy 6 and verse 11. But as for you, O man of God, flee these things. And the main thing he's talking about there is the love of money, which is the root of all kinds of evil. He's saying, flee from all these. Instead, pursue righteousness, godliness, faith, love, and there is the word, steadfastness, gentleness. One way in which we can understand a word is by simply looking at its synonyms. In other words, other words that represent something of the idea behind that word. And some of your versions, in fact, may even have other words rather than steadfastness. So, steadfastness can be replaced with perseverance or endurance or patience or constancy and so forth. All those ideas are in this one word, steadfast. The Greek word is even easier once you just know a little bit of Greek. And it's eupomeno. Eupo is where we get the word hyper. And actually, the phrase means to be under something. And then meno is simply the word remain. And thankfully, it sounds a little bit like the English word. So that makes life a little easier for us. And so the word itself means to remain under a trial, to remain under something. So there is pressure that is building on you, but you are still able to sustain it. It's the kind of activity that you find, especially those who are trying to build muscles in the gym, doing. They begin to lift heavy weights, and in lifting them, they seek to sustain those same weights in the air. The weaker ones are very quick to bring them down. Those who are stronger, able-bodied, who are just trying to impress the young ladies who are also in the gym, do a better job in keeping those weights in the air. They remain under that trial, under that weight. The word itself appears at least 32 times in the New Testament, and it is one of those that is a fruit of self-control, and hence the connection that we have in the text. It means a firm commitment to endure in the long haul. In other words, we can all run. If we're being asked to run between this pole and the next one, all of us can run. Doesn't matter how old we are, between this pole and the next one. But if you're now being asked to run between here and the curfew around about, then a few of us get dropped out immediately. We won't even reach the next traffic lights at the SDA church. We've given up. Others will continue and be able to reach the Kamwala Shopping Center. Now, it is that long haul that is being spoken about here in terms of continuing living the Christian life and growing in that Christian life. That's what this steadfastness is all about. Another way in which we appreciate a word is not so much the synonyms, but its opposites. And the opposite of the word steadfast or steadfastness is uncertain, shaky, wavering, unreliable, faltering, etc., etc. Again, it helps you to catch the picture that what Peter is saying here to the believers is that they must not be wavering and unreliable and faltering. No, there must be a constancy. There must be an endurance. There must be a persevering in their lives that goes on and on and on in terms of growth. How do we apply this then to the Christian life? Well, first of all, I do have bad news for you today, if you're a Christian. And it is this, that temptations and trials will come into your life and will keep coming and keep coming and keep coming until you die. Now, most of you are still looking at me like I haven't said anything. Let me repeat. Because this is where the subject of steadfastness comes into the picture. Temptations and trials will come in your life, and they will keep coming and coming and coming until you die. There will never come a day when you're still in this world where you will now graduate, nothing like that, from temptations and trials. Now, with respect to work, for instance, life is a little different. Most of you will know that the time comes when your employers and the government of the Republic of Zambia will retire you. They will say to you, thank you very much. You've put in your best. Now you can enjoy the rest of your earthly life by receiving free money. Okay, it's not really free. You worked for it. But it will sort of just be coming and coming and coming without you continuing to work for it. And a lot of people look forward to that time when they no longer have to wake up early to go to work, when they no longer have to be assessed based on their productivity. They look forward to that day when they can bask under the sun the whole day and not get a phone call, where are you? Now, the point I'm making here is that with respect to sin and temptation, rather temptation and trial, that will never happen. So here you are, you're probably a Christian for 5 years, and you're looking at Christians who've been around for about 30 years, and you're saying to yourself, yeah, you know, I really look forward to the day when I'll be able to say, you know, I've been working with the Lord for 30 years. Thinking that, you know, when you get to that stage now, you are in cruising level if it's an aeroplane. You are just going, free flowing. You defeated Satan a few years ago. Whee! That won't happen. 30 years into your Christian life, he is still pulling in one way or the other. The point is, there will never come a time, please listen to me, here's the bad news, when temptation and trials will come to an end. Never. So this subject of steadfastness has to do with this fact that you must never give in, never, to Satan's temptations and to the world's trials. You must never finally say, I'm giving up. I'm yielding. Add steadfastness to self-control. We can all exercise self-control for one day. Maybe even 1 week. Maybe even 1 month. Peter is saying here, go beyond that. Continue with this self-control. Be constant with this self-control. Don't buckle under the weight of temptation. That's the point he's giving here. Let's use another example. Here's a young lady, single, nice Christian, loves the Lord. She's got a new job, and where she's now working, everybody knows that she's a wonderful Christian. But there's one man who wants her. So he begins, and she says, no, I'm a Christian. He doesn't give up. Sends trophies, offers lifts, offers talk time, suggests possible promotion. Initially, she didn't even want to talk with him. Somewhere along the line, she begins to entertain him and his jokes. He starts calling her sweetie. She begins to allow that. She just giggles back. What's beginning to happen? That initial self-control is being eroded. And suddenly, a few months later, you're sitting with a young lady either wanting to get married to a typical non-Christian. And you say, how? Or we're still even pregnant. You say, how? Well, it was the failure in steadfastness. The self-control that was once upon a time there got eroded. Hence the importance of this. You see, we should be thinking of spiritual steadfastness as the equal or parallel of physical steadfastness. Remember, I spoke about the lifting of weights or the running of the marathon. The reason why we finally yield to the pressure, the weight, or the muscles that are screaming is simply that. The muscles that are screaming. Something in us finally just says, enough is enough. I cannot bear with this any longer. And we yield. Now, exactly what happens in the physical is what happens in the spiritual. Is exactly what happens in the spiritual. You start saying to yourself, in the moral, spiritual realm, I think these standards I've been maintaining are not necessary. I'm tired of saying no and no and no. I'm tired of still worshiping God when He is denying me of these benefits. I'm tired of being laughed at. I'm tired. And it's real within you. It's real. And in the process, you make a moral, spiritual decision that is disastrous to your life. Disastrous. You gave up. In the book of James, which is just two books before, chapter 5, and verse 7, James addresses this issue of patience in suffering. Patience in suffering. And really, that's what steadfastness is all about. When there is pressure on you that causes you to suffer, and you are suffering because you are a Christian, and for you to be able to say, I will continue. That's what steadfastness is. Let's read this section, because he refers to Job, whom we are reading about in our consecutive reading, as an example of steadfastness. Chapter 5 and verse 7. Be patient, therefore, brothers, until the coming of the Lord. See how the farmer waits for the precious fruit of the earth, being patient about it until it receives the early and late rains. You will recall that the word patience was a synonym of steadfastness. You also be patient. Establish your hearts, for the coming of the Lord is at hand. Do not grumble against one another, brothers, so that you may not be judged. Behold, the judge is standing at the door. Now that grumbling is a form of finally yielding. You now start gossiping and slandering and grumbling and so on. You have yielded to the pressure that was on you. Verse 10. As an example of suffering and patience, brothers, take the prophets who spoke in the name of the Lord. Behold, we consider those blessed who remain steadfast. You have heard of the steadfastness of Job, and you've seen the purpose of the Lord, how the Lord is compassionate and merciful. Compassionate and merciful. We know Job's story. How he literally lost everything. Everything that he had before. All his wealth. All his children were also killed. You remember Job's first answer? The Lord gave, the Lord has taken away, blessed be the name of Him. But when the suffering prolonged and God spliced in a wife who was saying to him, curse God and die, and then he spliced in friends who were closer to holes in a bucket in terms of being useful. They were taunting him. They were accusing him and so on and so forth. I mean, it was hard for Job. Again and again, as you read the book of Job and you're hearing Job's answers. I mean, last week's passage, Job cried to His Redeemer, I know that my Redeemer lives, and one day He will come and vindicate me. He's still continuing. He's persevering.
And he persevered to the very end. He persevered to the very end.
Well, friends, that's the challenge that comes to us in a passage such as this. It is a challenge to us to be consistent in our self-control. Consistent in our growth in knowledge. Consistent in our growth in excellence, our commitment to virtue, that I'm going to be the best possible Christian there can be who is still alive in this nation of Zambia. I will do my best. That kind of consistency is what's been spoken about here. And it means being consistent in your growth. Your growth. So this consistency is not in terms of just continuing, somehow just continuing being there. No. It's going up and up and up and up. And anybody who is with you this year and then is with you the following year should be able to testify that here is an individual who is growing in grace. As we shall be singing in closing, I'm pressing on the upward way, new heights I'm gaining every day. I'm very deliberate. That's why I buy Christian books. I want to grow in my knowledge of the things of God deliberately. That's why I set aside time for my own devotions, my own reading, my own praying, because I want to grow. I know that this won't just happen by accident. That's why I schedule my life around times of fellowship with believers. It's because I know that I need this extra warmth in order for me to grow and grow and grow. I'm deliberate. I'm consistent in that area. The sad reality is that what I've just described is extremely rare. Extremely rare. Instead, when difficulties come in our lives and they persist in our lives, we completely forget that, in fact, this is Christianity 101. In other words, first year stuff. The trials have come into my life. So let's hurry on, because it's in how to add steadfastness that we begin to see practicalities here. Practicalities. Godly steadfastness grows out of faith, virtue or excellence, knowledge and self-control. They grow out of that, rather it grows out of that. You cannot be steadfast, for instance, if you don't have self-control. Out of question. It means when trials come or temptations come, you're not able to say no to yourself, and consequently you yield. And anybody who's ever made real progress in terms of physical exercise will tell you that there comes a time when the muscles are screaming for rest and he's saying no to himself, that we are not resting. Steady. So, knowledge as well, and I want to spend a little bit more time on this aspect of knowledge. Let's quickly look at Romans 5. Romans 5. and verse 3. Romans 5, verse 3. Just the way it begins tells us everything. Romans 5 and verse 3. The Bible says there, not only that, but we rejoice in our sufferings. How? Are you mad? How can you be rejoicing in your suffering? Well, look at his answer. Knowing. In other words, there's something I know that goes beyond the suffering that enables me to rejoice in suffering. And what is that knowledge? Listen to this. Knowing that suffering produces endurance, and endurance produces character, and character produces hope, and then this hope does not put us to shame. Now, the word endurance there is the word steadfastness. Eupomeno. Steadfastness. Knowing that suffering produces steadfastness. In other words, as I'm in the gym or on the racing track and I'm exercising regularly, what's happening? I'm able to go further because my muscles are getting stronger. So the suffering is producing stamina, spiritual stamina, for me to go from strength to strength. Or, as James puts it, James chapter 1. Again, notice the knowledge part. James 1 and verse 3. I begin with verse 2. Count it all joy, my brothers, when you meet trials of various kinds. For you know that the testing of your faith produces steadfastness. Now again, don't miss that little word, no. Verse 3. For you know that the testing of your faith produces steadfastness. And of course, we're talking about steadfastness here. And let steadfastness have its full effect, that you may be perfect, complete, lacking in nothing. Okay? In other words, you become mature as a fruit of these testing, the trials. The thing I want you to notice there is this aspect of knowledge. That the thing that differentiates individuals who persevere, who are steadfast, who continue growing from those who go through the same trials and bam, collapse, is the knowledge. The knowledge. A few obvious examples. When trials come in your life, maybe it's a husband who's really making your life a living hell. Where is the problem coming from? This trial, where is it coming from? Now, first of all, yes, it's your husband. Terrible man he is. And number two, yes, you're right, it's the devil. Satan is using him. But if you stop there, there's no way you can rejoice in yourself. You must get to stage three. It's God. It's God. It is God. You remember Joseph in the Old Testament when his brothers sold him into slavery. Finally, the tables turned. They were in front of him. They were even lying to him, to say, your father, before he died, said, forgive us. His reply to them was classic. He said, am I in the place of God? You meant this for evil.
I know that. But here was his next point. God meant it for good. There were two brains behind what happened. Your brain, your malicious, sinful, wicked brain. But there was another brain, God's brain. A benevolent brain. A wise brain. A good brain. That was meant to achieve something good. With that, I am satisfied. I will be a blessing. Now, how many of us have that knowledge when your boss is proving quite a nightmare to you? When your spouse is now becoming something of the devil walking on 2 feet? How many of us are able to look right through this and say, it is the Lord, he knows what is best, I will live trusting in him. You see, steadfastness comes from knowledge. As long as your knowledge base is as worldly as your neighbors who are unbelievers, there is no way you can be steadfast. Absolutely zero. Very closely connected to that is the fact that God deprives you of things or gives you trials and temptations to mature you, to make you stronger, to bless you in the end when you have stood the test of time. Again, it's having that knowledge that enables you to say, I will make my way through this. It has come, it will go. And depending on how I handle this current trial, he who has allowed it to come into my life will know that this is now the end of the medicine. He will take away that trial and he will bless you. He will bless you. That knowledge. That knowledge. Let me throw in one more. I've got quite a number of them here. It is that Jesus is my primary model in handling the trials of life. He's my model of excellence. My model of excellence. 1 Peter chapter 2. I could have begun from verse 18, but let me come right down to where the example itself is, and it's verse 22. Oh no, let's begin with verse 21. For to this you've been called, because Christ also suffered for you, leaving you an example, so that you might follow in his steps. He committed no sin, neither was deceit found in his mouth. When he was reviled, he did not revile in return. When he suffered, he did not threaten, but continued to entrust himself to him who judges justly. So there he was, being called all kinds of names, being accused of all kinds of things, not a word from him. Why? He looked up to God and he said, God, you are my final vindicator. You know. What do we do? When it's our turn on earth and we are being vilified, we forget Jesus completely. Who is he to think he can say that to me, Alitumbasa, and he becomes Cho Chise. You failed the test. That's not Jesus' example.
So we have a model, one to follow, Jesus himself. Again, when you have this knowledge in you, it enables you to persevere in the midst of all these trials. Oh, brethren, let me hurry on. So, Christian, grow up. Grow up. Make every effort to supplement your self-control with steadfastness. As I said, brethren, at the very beginning, in my 40 years as a Christian, this issue is what stares me back in the face like a nightmare. That so many people that were my fellow young people with whom we sang the praises of God are a sorry sight today. A sorry sight today. Instead of reminding me of a worship that's out there striking for Jesus and bringing souls into the kingdom, they remind me of shattered ships that are now simply in the dockyard. Shattered. Shattered. I'm not a prophet. Neither am I a son of a prophet. But sadly, there are many of you right now listening to me, and it's not sinking. It's not. A few months from now, a few years from now, we'll be shaking our heads and saying, that guy was promising. Trials came. Temptations came. He buckled. She buckled. I wish that would not be true. But I said, I've been a Christian long enough. And I've been a pastor long enough to know that unless Jesus Christ returns, there are some of you here who are still not taking the issue of steadfastness seriously. Tomorrow's church desperately needs leaders. Desperate. We need younger elders. We need fresh missionaries. That ain't gonna happen without the virtue of steadfastness. It won't happen. So my appeal to this crowd in here this morning is, let us all declare that we are pressing on the upward way. New heights we are gaining every day. And still praying as we are doing so, Lord, lift me up. The midst of the trials, the midst of the temptation, let me come out even better. Amen.